You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jays. Raining Jays.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast, and we want to thank you for making this part of your daily routine. We're here for you Monday through Friday. Even a little delayed on this Friday, we're still doing this Friday podcast, ending your week in style. It's me, John Corrales, Jay King. I'm with Mass Live. Jay's with The Athletic. We're the Rain and Jays, joined by my partner on Mass Live, Tom Westerholm. I guess we should just introduce Jay as former Mass Live employee.
Yeah. Current The Athletic.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, yeah. Current, whatever. But it's the Mass Live part that we really, that's really what it is.
The Athletic part works too.
All right. So the reason we've all congregated together is because we've all done these pieces all week long on what the hell happens to the Celtics if certain things happen. Kyrie stays, we get Anthony Davis. Kyrie leaves, we get Anthony Davis. Kyrie leaves, we don't get Anthony Davis. So Tom and I wrote about those in three separate pieces. Jay wrote about Kyrie leaving in his own Athletic piece. And we're going to break down our rationale for everything that happened here. And all of this is brought to you by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Hotels.com, be there, do that, get rewarded. Untuck It, if you're looking for a great Father's Day idea. Their shirts are specifically designed to look great untucked and feel comfortable at work or on the weekend. No tucking or tailoring required. Go to untuckit.com, promo code NBA for 20% off. And Grip 6 belts, ultra light with no holes, no flap. And it's a great Father's Day gift. Go to grip6.com/lock, L-O-C-K-E, for a special offer there. And of course, you could always subscribe using the new Himalaya podcast app. Free, super easy to use. Every single podcast you're looking for. Curated playlists made just for you by the expert podcast tastemakers. That's the Himalaya podcast app, where everywhere podcasts exist. And you can also tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Celtics. Okay, all that out of the way. Let's start with our scenarios. And let's get ours out of the way, Tom, and Jay, you can chime in, because you didn't talk about Kyrie and Anthony Davis being together. You just had Kyrie leaving, right?
That is correct.
Okay, so we're going to go with the Kyrie and Anthony Davis are Celtics scenario. And let's start with this. Is this a fair trade for Anthony Davis? Going back and forth, we settled on Smart, Tatum, the 14th pick, Robert Williams, and the Memphis pick for Anthony Davis. Jay, do you think that's you think that's enough to get it done?
Yeah, so some people I've spoken to haven't been convinced that the Celtics would need to load up Tatum, Smart, and the Grizzlies pick if all those pieces were involved. I think they probably would, and most people think they probably would, but just because the Lakers' assets aren't what they used to be with guys dealing with injuries, whether it's Lonzo, Brandon Ingram with the scary blood clots, the Knicks, I don't think they can top, not sure they can top an offer with headlined by Jason Tatum no matter what. And so I'm not 100% convinced the Celtics would need to offer all of it, but the Pelicans have all the leverage. And there will be a lot of suitors, numerous suitors, who are very kind of desperate to get AD. So it might take all of what the Celtics have. So,
but in this scenario, like, they keep Jaylen Brown.
Yes, correct.
That is correct. And I will say I have a hard time imagining the Celtics ponying up both Jaylen and Tatum in one offer without just without the knowledge. I don't think AD is at any point going to give them an indication that, you know, yes or no, he's going to stay. And I feel like without that, it would be really tough to give up every single asset in that way. That feels like that would be, a real tall ask on New Orleans' part, which I'm sure they'll try, but I don't know that they'll actually be able to come to an agreement on that.
Is it possible Jaylen and Tatum are the two best prospects available? Or potentially available?
Of all, I might.
Like maybe the third
Ingram,
overall pick.
I might give Ingram if he's
but
healthy.
The blood clot things are scary.
That's why I said if he's healthy. Like that's the key thing. If he's healthy and if those aren't going to scare you off, then I don't know. I really don't know what the medical is on that. I'm scared off by it. That's for sure.
And the third pick and the fourth pick, depending on how you evaluate this draft, I guess, could be seen as better.
Sure. But okay. But the question then becomes, is RJ Barrett to you better than Jason Tatum? Because that's really because everything else the Knicks have to offer isn't better than Tatum or Brown.
Or RJ Barrett with 4 years on a rookie deal plus whatever other team control you have versus Tatum with just two more.
Sure. But so, is it worth giving up the other stuff like that the Celtics could give you? Is it worth giving up that Grizzlies pick? Is it worth giving up the 14th pick? Or Marcus Smart even to get a guy just two more years on a rookie contract?
Yeah, Marcus Smart, I feel like, has been overlooked in this. Like, people are in some ways acting like Marcus Smart would just be salary to throw in. Like, the guy was first team all defense.
Right.
He's become a valuable offensive player. He's now a league average shooter. Like, he's really good. And he's on a really valuable contract for the next 3 years. So that's a plus asset for sure right now. Smart's contract.
And let's be fair. He's both. They need him for the salary, and he's a good player. Like, he's both of those things. Because you don't get this done without Marcus Smart. Like, he makes $12 million, and to match these salaries, the way I have it structured, Smart, Tatum, the 14th pick, who you select and sign and aggregate that salary, then that gets the deal done financially. If you don't have Marcus Smart, if you insist on keeping Marcus Smart, then you're in trouble. You can't get the deal done unless you include Jaylen Brown, and then it's Tatum and Brown. So
far-fetched sign and trade.
Yeah, options.
You have options, but again, those are far-fetched. Like, this is the most realistic deal, I think.
Yep, agreed.
Okay, so we're agreed that this would be enough to get the deal done for the Pelicans. Okay, so now Kyrie and Anthony Davis are here. They're over the cap. Now, my first move was to renegotiate Al Horford. I've gotten a little bit of shit online about it, but I think I'm going 5 years. Maybe it doesn't have to be 5 years. Maybe it's 4 years. But if you give him 5 years starting at about 15 or 15.5, you can get out to an 89-something million dollar. You can get it to basically almost 90. And you can structure it as 90 million, however the numbers need to work out. But I think that's that long-term type of deal. You can shave a year off, which, Tom, I believe you did, right?
I did do that, yep. And when you shave a year off, you're still, you know, a good, I think it was like either, yeah, it was like about $40 million more guaranteed, even like than his deal for next year, even with that year trimmed off. But yeah, I did trim 1 year off.
Yeah, and you started, I'm just going through your piece, you started with, I think, a little bit higher first-year salary and went 4 years.
I believe so. Mine ended up being 4 years and about $72 million.
Okay, so you start with a little bit of a higher first-year salary. Either way, and Jay, we've talked about this, I think in all of these scenarios, I think it's a good bet that longer-term money with that security for Al Horford is very attractive for him.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to think so. At his age, he's going to be 33 when the next season starts. He'd have to give up money at the start of the contract, but it could be well worth it financially to lock up the next couple of years, few years, whatever it is, for him. I do think he wants to see assurances that the Celtics are going to remain contenders before sticking with the team. That's at least the vibe I got when he discussed it briefly.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get AD, if Kyrie comes back, look, yeah, it's going to be a contender, man. So, yeah.
Right.
But, yeah, his free agency is really important to the Celtics, to me. Like, they need to convince him to stay. And whether Kyrie goes, Kyrie stays, like, if both those guys go, then you're looking at full rebuild. And a team that definitely can't contend. And a team, like, then you trade Hayward. It's going to be a wild summer.
Well,
Every time I think about it all.
Let's save the trade Hayward for the last segment, because that's something that or the next segment, that's something that we definitely get into. Okay, so in this scenario, we've gotten Davis. Kyrie sticks around. He's got the max contract starting at 32.7, well over the cap, well over the tax. So now we're filling out. We're everybody on board with re-signing Marcus Morris in this scenario. I think you need him on the bench, right? You yep. did that, Tom. I think that makes a lot of sense. And just to discuss that for a quick second, a reasonable number, I think, at $10 million a year, maybe. Do you think that's enough to bring Morris back? Or do you have to go a little bit higher?
I went a little bit higher, but not too much higher. I ended up giving him roughly Marcus Smart money for 2 years. That I don't know for like a fact that would get him, but giving him roughly 2 years, roughly $26 million total, that almost equals his career earnings to date in his 8 years. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely, you know, it's definitely like a decent contract, but I mean, listen, he had a pretty good playoffs. He started the year really hot, and a lot of people sort of formed their opinions on him, you know, during that stretch. And I could see him getting more. So I think that was where I ended up on it. I ended up with the 2 years and paying him a little bit extra and, you know, kind of keeping that future flexibility after the 2 years. But I think that it's certainly possible that, you know, he ends up with something better than that.
Jay, what do you think?
Yeah. I mean, it all depends on the market. There are a lot of teams with cap space and
yep.
a lot of teams that could look to use that cap space elsewhere if they whiff on their top targets. I do think there's kind of a weird dynamic, not necessarily a weird dynamic, but I do think a couple of those teams are smart teams that are kind of building for the future. So if they whiff, like I think the Clippers, if they whiff, they're not going to give a lot of money to a guy like Marcus Morris. They're going to keep the flexibility to go after stars moving forward. I think the Nets probably the same thing. If they whiff on their top targets, they'll probably do the same thing. So there might not be as much money as you think. But like if the Lakers miss on guys, then they're going to be trying to bring in vets and try to win right away because they've got LeBron. They need to do that. So he's a guy. I don't know what the market will be for him. Obviously, he had a pretty good year. Obviously, like Tom said, like, halfway through the season, I thought he was going to get a big hefty bag.
Oh yeah.
now it'll be like pretty big bag.
It's the bag. He will not.
Yeah. Cause I do think he salvaged, like, you know, not all of the value that he was getting when he was shooting like 50% from three, but I do think he salvaged some of his value by playing pretty well in the playoffs. Like, he was one of their more reliable guys in a lot of ways. And I think that, you know, I think that's going to stick with a lot of teams.
And even though he slumped in the second half, it was still his most efficient season. He showed he can play pick and pop three. He showed he can be more of a spot up 3-point shooter. He eliminated some of the ISO Mook stuff.
He eliminated a lot of it early, and then it came back. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm just trying to go through Philly's cap because, Jay, you brought up Philly way early in the whole thing, and I don't know that I'm trying to look at their cap holds and everything. It's too complicated to do right now, but I'm trying to think of threats to the Celtics for re-signing him. My thought was I started him at $10 million. And that basically equals 3 years. I went 3 year deal. 3 years, 32. In this situation, you can pump it up to a little bit more because it doesn't matter. You're already over the cap. It's a matter of taxing. You want to go to 11 and give him 3 years, 35. If it's a 3 year deal, that's fine. That also works in this scenario. So Mook coming back, and then now we're playing around with exceptions. And in this scenario,
right? And real quick, we should note, because I don't think we necessarily did, in this scenario where they're over the cap, it's basically like, because they have the bird rights on Mook, they kind of have to bring him back, right? Because
yes.
I mean, right. Otherwise they don't have otherwise they just don't have the bodies and they don't have any money to go get anybody else.
Right. The only money yet, to be clear, the only money they have in this scenario after making that trade is a mid-level exception and veteran minimum contracts. So the bird rights on Mook is you really have no choice. He's the best player you're going to get, and you can go ahead and give him 10, 11, 12 million, whatever the number you think he should get. Like that you can spend, and it's that's your right to spend it with the bird rights. So that's an important clarification. Okay, so after that, now we basically have a team that's above the tax. You can't sign and trade. Terry Rozier is out in this scenario. He's gone. Daniel Tice, I assume, out in this scenario for everybody. They're not going to be able to give him. It's a weird scenario with him. It's early bird rights. So the most they can give him is like just over 2 million. And he could probably get more than that in Germany. So he's gone. I assume Wanamaker's gone. So we've got now a mid-level exception and veteran minimum contracts. So my mid-level went to Corey Joseph, who I think at the taxpayer mid-level, he might be able to get a little bit more than 5.7 million. But my pitch to him is 5.7 million, 1 year. You're the backup. You get the shine. This is a championship level team. If you can be an adequate backup point guard, you can play here for a year and then increase your value and then go get a longer term deal somewhere else. And then I filled out my bench with Jared Dudley, Jamal Crawford, and then the two draft picks, which I don't think matter in this scenario because they're not going to play.
Who's playing backup three for you?
Mook.
So he ain't a three though.
Oh, wait, no. I'm sorry. I got Jalen coming off the bench.
Okay.
My starting lineup will be Kyrie, Anthony Davis, Gordon Hayward, Kyrie, Anthony Davis, Horford, Hayward, and do I have Brown in the starting lineup? Maybe I have Mook in the starting lineup and Brown coming off the bench. Regardless, I think you can work it out. I think you can work that out. Mook's more than four for sure.
Yeah, you don't have many threes on that. I might throw that Corey Joseph money at a three.
Yeah, but who's your backup point guard
two,
then?
Three. Sound like a Larkin or Wanamaker type, or a guy Raymond Felton
and
or something.
Both Wanamaker and Larkin, I believe, they also have bird rights on. By the way, I actually brought Wanamaker back for that reason.
You have, I believe, early bird. The same reason. So I think I got to look at the
Wanamaker a Celtic for another year.
I think. And it's not that he's going to get this. I mean, they have to make a $1.6 million qualifying offer. Like that might just be what he signs for. Like that's who's going to give Wanamaker more than $1.6 million. So that's definitely like they could just give him the qualifying offer and say, that's your offer. And then he can sign for a year and just be unrestricted next year. That could work. I mean, I didn't see enough from Wanamaker to think he's okay, but are you trusting him to be the backup point guard on this team? I don't know.
Well, I'm not because I threw my taxpayer mid-level at a point guard too. But yeah.
Yeah. You went with Ish Smith in this scenario, right?
I did. Yeah. I figured, listen, he's not, going to be the most reliable shooter or anything like that. But I mean, he's quick. He can handle the ball. He can distribute. I mean, at this point, you just kind of, with the taxpayer mid-level, you're not going to get the perfect player. So I just wanted somebody who could kind of get everybody involved and could kind of initiate the offense when Kyrie leaves. Well, when Kyrie leaves the game, not Boston.
Right. I mean, how much could Jared, I got Jared Dudley on a minimum contract. How much can he give you off the bench as a three?
Not much.
15 minutes.
A four. Sometimes he's a four. Sometimes a five. Now.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I'm okay. So I definitely have a hole in this roster. You're not going to build a perfect roster. I think that's part of the exercise here, to just know, like, you're what are your options? Like, okay, fine. If you don't think Corey Joseph or a backup point guard with the mid level, so you go throw that money at a small forward.
PJ Dozier, son.
Well, I mean, you could. I mean, this and that's, again, the point of this exercise is there are tough decisions. And even if you trade for Anthony Davis and you have him and Kyrie and Gordon and Jaylen, I mean, it's a very front loaded roster. You don't have a ton of money to bring anybody back. I mean, it would be very simple if Terry Rozier was happy being a point guard, a backup point guard, but he's not, because then they could use his bird rights. That would solve a lot of problems, but he can't fit in that role. So he's got to go.
What about re-signing him just to trade him later?
I mean, you could pull a sign and trade, and it makes it a sign and trade for him. Like, so say he wants to go to Phoenix, whatever, or Chicago. I mean, Chicago, if you want to see if they can play along, you can give Rozier a contract and trade him into their cap space and get a trade exception. He'd be a base year compensation guy. So the trade exception you get back would basically be worth, I think, half of his contract. So it still gives you a tool. So you sign him for $12 million. You trade him to Phoenix, let's say, in a sign and trade, and you get back a $6 million trade exception. Well, you could use that $6 million to maybe go out and trade for a point guard. It's not great, but it's more than you have currently. So there's something you can do. The Celtics can't take back a sign and trade guy because they'd be hard capped and they'd be spending too much money.
Just keep him for 6 months, trade him in February.
I don't want Terry Rozier in that situation. You trade him in February for what? Like you want Terry Rozier another 6 months of this bullshit that he was just going through? Like, he's not even going to agree to that. Like, there's
for $12 million, he has no choice. Whatever it is, you know.
I mean, unless he gets an offer like that from somewhere else.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true. The Celtics could match and bring him back. Do you? I don't know. I don't know that I want that at all. Like, I definitely don't want that.
I don't know. Like, if I was strapped to get depth, I'd be cool with bringing Terry back and even telling him, like, look, we're not going to keep you around forever. We're going to look to trade you, and we're going to look to find you a spot where you can play a lot of minutes. But for now, we'd like to have you around and use your contract, and we'll give you minutes just like we did last year, and hopefully you can use those better than you did last year. Let's have a new start here. I don't know. To me, letting an asset go just because, especially in a situation where you could need salary for trades at a later date, would be an anti-Celtics thing to do.
One thing I think we are somewhat kind of passing over here with the depth questions is that the Celtics, in our scenario, they do still have two draft picks. And I know that rookies aren't all, you know, like, reliable necessarily, especially once you get into the 20s. But I mean, if you are looking for a backup three and you're really in a pinch, it's like, okay, you know, maybe the Celtics take Keldon Johnson. Maybe they, you know, take some guy who can Talen Horton Tucker, like guys who are versatile and can do a bunch of different things. So, I mean, there would be some options that, you know, maybe you get lucky and maybe the rookie can contribute right away. And, you know, maybe you're a little less lucky and, you know, more expected where it takes them a few years to get going. But if you're just looking for that backup role and maybe you can kind of, you know, play with things and try to stagger Jaylen and Hayward, you know, there are some options there with young guys, even if they aren't the most reliable.
Yeah, I mean, there's some. I don't like, and I admit I'm not the biggest draft guy right now. So I'm not looking at a lot. I know you are. I know you are. You're the draft guy. And I don't expect. I mean, they could, but I mean, you're looking at the 20th pick, 22nd pick in the draft. I don't know how much you can expect from them right away. I know we're living in a world right now where everybody's losing their mind over Pascal Siakam, and he was a 27th pick. And so those guys can eventually become useful. I don't know that they become useful in an immediate scenario. But again, speaks to the difficulty of doing this, that you may have to rely on the 20th pick in the draft to give you a player that cross your fingers and hope we're going to need something out of this guy. We can't just send him to the G League all year. So there is difficulty all the way around. Why don't we take a break? That's our they trade for Anthony Davis scenario and keep Kyrie. We'll continue the conversation afterwards with our second piece, which was Kyrie and Anthony Davis, both not Celtics. So the complete opposite doomsday scenario. Because really, honestly, the third segment where Kyrie leaves and they still trade for Anthony Davis, I hate. I've come to hate that, and we're going to save that for last. So we'll come right back and talk about more of this on the Locked On Celtics podcast. So all week long, Tom and I have been creating these scenarios and figuring out what these rosters are going to be. And now Jay has his piece on what if Kyrie leaves. Jay, I didn't get a chance to read your piece yet. Do you get into the is Anthony Davis gone as well? Is this your
Tuesday? I went out and traded for Anthony Davis.
You did?
Yep.
Okay. So we'll really get into the meat of yours in the next
rolling segment. Rolling those dice.
Okay. So for us in this second segment, we've got both of those guys gone. And now in this scenario, here's the question. Because now Tom and I each split the possibilities here just to give a different look. Tom, you had Al Horford saying goodbye. So you now...
I did.
So you went with... Horford's gone. Kyrie's gone. No Anthony Davis. This is doomsday. This is everything. Gone. So you start with Smart, Hayward, Tatum, Brown, Yabu, Robert Williams, Semi Ojeleye. And now you have Aaron Baines coming back. And so you rely on the draft. You are now, this is a young guy. We're just going with the youth.
Yeah. And so basically with the draft, I mean, I looked at with the team the Celtics have, like with the draft, you can basically go best talent available the whole time, which is a nice way to be able to draft because then you can, you know, really pick up some value. So, I mean, no, without getting too much into the draft, guys, I went Romeo Langford at the two guard, who I'm pretty high on. I think he's got a lot of potential as a slasher, maybe some potential as a shooter once his hand heals. Talen Horton-Tucker, who reminds me a little of Marcus Smart in that he defends really hard and can defend basically 1 through 5. And Grant Williams, who's just like a big body who can pick and pop. So, you know, with that, you're going to have some interesting issues with this scenario. You're going to have some interesting issues, especially like at the point guard, because as good as Marcus Smart was kind of spotting up this year, you know, he's never going to be a guy who hurts you off the dribble from three, probably. I'm sure he thinks he can, but you know, the team that I ended up putting together, the big signing, you actually create about $26 million in cap space with all of, if Horford leaves and Kyrie leaves and they don't trade for AD. So I actually went out and pursued Bojan Bogdanović, the Pacers small forward, who you know, I don't think that he, obviously he's not the best player on a title contending team, but on this Celtics team where, you know, they're probably putting things kind of in Tatum's hands. I think he's kind of an intriguing second guy who can hit threes and, you know, space the floor and do a couple of other tricky things as well. So it was an interesting exercise just to kind of look at things. Okay, what if, obviously we've been operating under this assumption that the Celtics don't have any cap space. But what if everything goes wrong and they do have a little room to pursue somebody? Because, I mean, there were other names out there as well. Like, you know, they could take a shot at Julius Randle. They could, you know, go after other guys who aren't max guys because, you know, they are still going to need to fill out a roster, but who are, you know, still intriguing talents who bring something to the table. You know, this team obviously is not a championship contender, but they're young and they're fun. And, you know, I do think that they would at the very least compete for a playoff spot. And I think that, you know, maybe looking like a 6 or 7 seed with them too. So.
Instead of giving that money to Bogdanovich, do you think they'd be better off throwing an offer sheet at a young guy? Is there a young guy that would even be?
Yeah. I wondered about that. I think that's plausible. I do kind of wonder though, if they would value going after the young guy or if they would value the sort of the playoff reps. Obviously Tatum and Brown have gotten playoff reps, but I mean, if those guys are your focus now, is it more valuable to bring in a young guy on an offer sheet, or is it more valuable to, you know, get somebody who can help those guys, who can sort of facilitate those guys now as they develop? And I don't know the answer to that question. I think it could go either way.
The guy I would be thinking like a Satoransky. Like,
yeah,
I like Satoransky. He's kind of got some versatility. He can play a little point guard. Like,
good spot up shooter. Yeah.
I don't know how much money it would take to lure him away from Washington. I think they think pretty highly of him after how he played this past year. But something like that would be interesting to me.
And I believe he's restricted, right? If I recall.
Yeah. It's so funny how we went from, like, Kyrie and Anthony Davis to, like, ooh, Satoransky or Bojan. Like, <that's laughs>
or Bojan. yeah, so, I mean, Satoransky, you'd have to convince him to leave, and you'd also have to, like, hit a number that the Wizards wouldn't match, which might be tough. But, yeah. He would be an interesting guy too.
Yeah, but the Wizards, though. I mean, that I like that idea because the Wizards are already an expensive team, and how much money are they going to spend to keep a guy like Satoransky? It really depends. Like, first of all, they don't have a GM yet, so
yes.
they need to like have a front office. So that's pretty much a big priority. I just wonder maybe if Morey will just force his way out of Houston and go ahead and try a rebuild in Washington. Houston's a mess. Anyway, that's an aside. Satoransky would be, he is restricted. You would have to overpay because you have to overpay a restricted free agent anyway to lure him away and to have the team not match. Because if it's a reasonable offer, they'll just match a reasonable offer. So you got to overpay a little bit. How much are you willing to overpay for a guy like that? And is that number going to be lower than the typical overpay because the Wizards already have, that's year one of John Wall's stupid contract where he's going to get $38 million. Does the new GM keep Bradley Beal? If they keep Bradley Beal, then I think that makes Satoransky a little bit more available versus if they trade Bradley Beal, then they might as well just start spending money on the younger guys and building for the future. So interesting scenario there. But that again, now if you've got that cap space, that just changes the entire dynamic of what the Celtics can do. They can, but maybe what you do is you don't even sign a guy. Maybe you just hold that cap space. Like Jay was talking about earlier with other teams. If you miss your target, if the Celtics miss their target with Anthony Davis and everybody leaves, then you still have to fill out that roster, but maybe you save a lot of that cap space as a way to make an unbalanced trade. Around, you know, December or February, you can start absorbing guys into cap space, and you can pull the rebuild where Danny Ainge says, all right, fine, we're rebuilding. We're going to give Tatum and Brown and Smart a chance to develop together a little bit. Maybe that's a scenario where you do trade Gordon Hayward, and maybe you start taking back the guys from teams that are trying to dump salary and will give you a pick for the right to do that. You know,
you could go too with the route the 76ers went the last couple of years where they overpaid veterans on short term deals.
Yep.
Like they gave JJ Redick, like, what was it, $20 million 1 year? They gave Amir Johnson $12 million per. And those guys got more money shorter term. So you can bring in veterans like that to get you to the playoffs, to surround.
Yep.
Tatum and Brown with quality mentors, whatever, like a Patrick Beverley type, say.
Yep. Like, that's a good one.
Throw big money at him over like 2 years or something and overpay him short term where he'll come in and he'll help you, but maybe he's not in your long term plans and then you maintain the flexibility moving forward. So there are so many, like, when you think about all the options that the Celtics could have, it really is crazy.
I actually have Patrick Beverley on my team here with Kyrie and Davis gone. I brought back Al Horford in this scenario, just to differ from Tom. So I did the same thing. It's a 5-year deal. It's spreading it out. It gives me a little bit of cap space to play with. I figured out I've got about 18 or so million in cap room. If I renounce, I'm renouncing everybody. Like, everybody's gone. Mook is gone. Rozier is gone. I'm renouncing everybody. I'm giving myself cap space. So I gave Beverley a contract. Now, the question is, how much is Beverley worth? And I gave him a contract, a 3-year deal, like I gave Mook, like it's starting at $10 million. Is $10 million a good number for Beverley, or is he going to get more?
I kind of think he's going to get more. I think that he would probably get something closer to Marcus Smart money and maybe a little bit more. Just, I mean, he's gotten a lot of shine over the last couple of years as, mm-hmm. as somebody who, especially what he brought to the Clippers and how important he was to the way that they played. So I think he'll end up getting more than 10, but I don't, you know, he's not like a max guy or anything like that.
Yeah, that really hurts my entire scenario because I'm trying to figure out because I'm really maximizing my cap space here. There's a room mid-level exception that opens up in this, and I'm giving James Dennis that 2 years at $4.7 million, so it's like a $9 million deal. And then I'm giving the rest of the money basically to Dwayne Dedmon. So I'm building, in this scenario, I'm building defense. My second unit is not going to score a ton, although, you know, Ennis can hit a three. Dedmon can now hit a three. But they're going to really defend. They're going to defend like crazy. And I'm looking for basically to get out into transition and, like, get Jaylen Brown running. I don't know if financially that's an actual possibility, but I think those three guys and James Ennis, I think, is an interesting free agent because I think he can be had for somewhere around $4 or $5 million. And just looking at the Celtics moving forward, regardless, I feel like that's a guy that they might want to take a swing at. Okay.
Yeah.
So my five in this is Smart, Tatum, Hayward, Horford, Baines. My bench is Brown, Beverley, Ennis, Dedmon, Robert Williams, Gershon Yabusele, and Shemi Ojeleye. I don't know. I think it's a decent enough team, but I think there are a ton of options when we open things up with Kyrie and Davis not here. So let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's discuss the scenario that all three of us wrote about, which is Anthony Davis comes to town anyway. It's a messy one. We'll talk about that when we come back in the Locked On Celtics podcast. After we were done writing about this, Tom and I both, like, messaged each other and we're just like, this sucks. I hate the scenario. Just don't want to do this at all. It's Kyrie Irving leaves, but the Celtics trade for Anthony Davis anyway. And I can see why they would do it, because you need a top 5, top 10 player on your team to get to the NBA Finals. Like, it's very difficult to have, like, a good spread out. Like, you need that one star to take over. Did somebody dispute that? Or is that a child? Do I hear
no
a child?
No dispute from me.
No.
I thought I heard a whine, but then I'm realizing it might be Tom's child that's somewhere around the phone.
Could be the dog I'm sitting is... for, too.
Or maybe I'm just hearing things in my age.
I'm out here dogs sitting.
All right, so I get it, but I hate it because it's still now the biggest problem in this scenario is you've given up salary. You've now taken back. You've given up multiple players. Marcus Smart, same trade. Marcus Smart is gone. Jason Tatum is gone. Robert Williams is gone. However you frame this trade, it's still a few players going out, one player coming back, and not really much money. So, Jay, let's start with you. What's your thinking here with the Celtics trading for Anthony Davis? How do you build a roster? What's your first move?
Obviously, you've got to try to convince him to stay. Like, that is goal
yes.
A, goal B, goal C as you put together your roster. And with that in mind, like, I don't think you have much of a choice. You kind of have to keep Terry Rozier around in this scenario.
Yeah.
You don't really have any money to go spend if he leaves. So I kept Terry Rozier. He would be my starting point guard. Jalen, who was not in my trade, was the two. Hayward, the three. Horford and Davis. And that's a really good starting five. And I think especially if Hayward does get healthy, and he should at least be better than he was this past year. If he's what he was before, then that could be just a dangerous, dangerous starting five. I think there's obviously hope that Rozier and Brown in different environments would both play even better than they did last year. And then the big thing for me is, how do you build the bench? That's where you start needing to make decisions. For me, I know you guys both kept Morris. I let Marcus Morris go. And I did that because I think Ojale is ready to take on those minutes and do a reasonable job. And he's also cheap. And so by letting Morris go, I was able to stay under the tax and then have the full mid-level rather than the smaller mid-level. And then I spent so much damn time calling people to see what could be feasible, what might not be feasible. I called like four different people to see how washed up they think Trevor Ariza is. and the results were mixed, but I ended up giving the full mid-level to Trevor Ariza, and because I think he'd be the most impact player on the market if he can regain some of his form from two seasons ago, or last season, I guess. He was really damn good. If he can approximate 75-80% of that, he's really good. He fits. He'd help the bench immensely. So I used the full mid-level on him. Went with just a cheap point guard. Used a biannual on Ish Smith. I don't know if he would do that. He's made $6 million this year. That would be a pay cut to 3.6. But like an Ish Smith, Jeremy Lin type could be a solid backup. And then you get to like the Raymond Feltons and of the world if you want to go deeper than that. And then I brought back Larkin. PJ Dozier was on my squad because I do think he has the athletic profile of the guys who have kind of surprisingly made it. When you look at the guys like that, it's like a Daniel House, an Alphonso McKinney, like the guys who have earned minutes on good teams out of nowhere have been guys who are long and athletic and can guard multiple positions. And I think Dozier has that type of versatile athleticism. So it would just be like a flyer type thing for him. And then I think I signed Gerald Green as a potential shooter, like off the bench. But that's the thing. Like, there's not a ton of knockdown shooting on that squad. There just wouldn't be. Maybe go after like a Kyle Korver. I don't know what he'd be worth. I don't even know if he's a free agent, but somebody like that, like, you would need some shooting somewhere. And I don't know. It is tough to build a bench. And then you got to convince Baines to stay, right? You guys right. both convinced Baines to stay. That's yeah, another thing. Yep. And with Davis and Horford, that might be a lot to convince him to stay.
One thing I considered with Baines was, like, if you could, like, what if you convinced Baines to stay and you convinced Horford to stay and you said, listen, guys, like, we might juggle you guys in the starting lineup, because I think Horford would actually bring a lot to, and obviously Horford would get way more minutes. But Horford would actually bring a lot to the second unit in terms of being able to facilitate the offense and in terms of, you know, just being like a very reliable pick and pop guy. And I think Baines and Davis in the starting lineup is actually pretty intriguing just with their kind of varied skill sets there and how much of a scoring load Davis would have to take on. I was kind of curious if you guys thought that was completely ridiculous or if that was somewhat reasonable.
No, I think Horford going to the bench is not the worst idea. And maybe the lineup might change depending in the playoffs because of matchups, but you're going to have to manage Horford's minutes anyway. I think that knee is just something that you're going to have to watch for the rest of his career. Not that it's going to be a big hindrance, but regular season, you're just going to have to manage his minutes. So maximizing his minutes by bringing him off the bench, that's not the worst idea in the world. And then playoff time, you make the adjustments the way you need to make the adjustments. I don't mind that. And especially if you've renegotiated his salary, you've got a $15 million player coming off the bench who's in his kind of approaching mid-30s. That makes total sense. And he really can be a big-time facilitator for them. I think that'd be really good. I've talked myself into going, it makes sense, too. It's really good. So there you go.
Jay, I did think it was interesting that you let Moot go, and you ended up creating getting the room for the full mid level. I also had the full mid level for reasons we can get into later, and I kept even keeping Mook around. But the guy that I pursued was Reggie Bullock with the full mid level, and I don't even know if he would necessarily like require the full mid level. Maybe he would, but I mean, he's obviously struggled a little bit with the Lakers, but I mean, he's 6'7". He shoots like 39% from three. He's pretty versatile. I think he would be kind of an intriguing guy just in terms of somebody who brings versatility, who can hit a 3-pointer and who wouldn't necessarily need, to always have the ball in his hands on a team that, has some options anyway.
Yeah. I think I was kind of scarred from this past year of all the talk about needing veterans. That I was just like, okay, if you're going to convince Anthony Davis you can win a title, you're going to need a guy with championship experience who doesn't care what role he's going to play, who doesn't care about shots or anything like that. Maybe Reggie Bullock wouldn't either. But we've seen Trevor Ariza like totally surrender to his role in Houston.
Strong point.
And so that was kind of why I went in that direction. I also think one of the interesting parts is I think the teams we put together would have like a fighter's chance in the East, right? Like they wouldn't be the favorites in the East. They wouldn't have much shot creation, especially out of like the guards. They wouldn't have like that killer perimeter scorer that title teams have needed for forever now, I guess. Unless Hayward comes back and like can approximate what he used to do, you can get some of that from him. But what's interesting to me is, and what I think you'd have to stress to Davis is the flexibility to go out and get another star further on. And I think if you have Terry's contract and Jalen's potential and Hayward, assuming he rebuilds his value to whatever extent, I think you can then use those guys as a package and you wouldn't have many draft picks left. But there, you could still like throw together some ways to look for another star to put with Davis if you need one. And I don't know. But to me, like the Toronto Raptors with Kawhi have done it just about perfectly. Right. And I don't know whether he's going to stay, but they built a team built entirely around him and put the right types of players around him to give them a chance to reach the finals, maybe win a finals this season, and then show him, you got to show him that you can do the same thing in the future. And so I think that would be the trick with Davis. There would be a ton of pressure to win right away, a ton of pressure to show him that the culture isn't as bad as it seemed this past season and that he would really like playing in Boston and that they can win and win big, because obviously that seems to be what he's most interested in.
Well, there would be extra pressure on the Celtics too, because I mean, the reason that the Raptors have been able to do this so well is because guys like Siakam, you know, can have a night like he did last night where he just goes completely crazy. And, you know, like, do the Celtics have like that young guy? Like, is Jalen that young guy who can kind of break out in the way that Siakam could? I don't know. It's difficult because Toronto kind of, like, they built their team around Kawhi, but then they also kind of got lucky because the team they had already built, even without Kawhi, was perfect for Kawhi. So it was, I don't know. Celtics are in a tough spot, if we haven't made that clear yet.
it's very, yes. All of these different approaches is so many. Like, my approach is actually kind of boring because I went with the, you're stuck, you've just got to re-sign everybody. Re-sign Rozier, re-sign Morris. And I went with my same plan before. Like, I'm still stuck on, we need a backup point guard. So I went with Corey Joseph again. I got Dudley and Crawford to come off the bench, try and help with some of the scoring. But the more interesting thing is really, Tom, how you created some of your cap space. But you actually made the trade for Gordon Hayward. You traded Gordon Hayward to Memphis.
Yeah, and I'm partially just did it to like have a different look. But sure. Yeah, I mean, it got kind of crazy quickly. So I basically traded Hayward and then, you know, whatever picks would be necessary to trade Hayward for Mike Conley. And then, you know, the Celtics have, you know, Conley obviously isn't Kyrie. He's not quite that, you know, like deadly scorer that Jay was talking about, but he's closer. And, you know, that gives the Celtics a star point guard or something close to a star point guard alongside Davis. And then they were still able to build, you know, with Jalen and Horford and, you know, and then whatever you can build off the bench. I re-signed Mook because it was pretty much impossible without to do anything without using bird rights. So I ended up re-signing him. I wonder in this scenario if there would be a kind of a thought to what Jay was talking about earlier with re-signing Rozier and just telling him, listen, man, we're going to trade you. We promise. We need this, you know, we need this option. But yeah, I mean, so my team came together. I don't even know if it, I don't know what to think of it, but it ended up being basically Conley, Jaylen Brown, Reggie Bullock in that starting lineup, along with Davis and Horford. And then I, you know, just kind of minimum guys off the bench plus Mook and then a couple of draft picks. It's tough. It's really tough. I kind of did it just to, like I said, just to see what it would look like if they did deal Hayward for somebody. And if they were able to pick up somebody, you know, as a point guard without keeping Rozier around. But I mean, kind of the same problem as your guys' teams. I just, you know, my team certainly isn't like running away with the East. They're pretty good. They would have a puncher's chance. They have Anthony Davis, who would be the best player in most playoff series, but maybe not against the Bucks. And it's like, other than that, there are definitely some holes in the roster that would need to be examined.
That there would be. And I think when we look at why we did these things, like some of these scenarios, like we forced these scenarios upon ourselves to say, okay, if they do X, then Y is, you know, we kind of communicated with each other. So this isn't necessarily exactly how, oh, if I was GM, I would do it this way. We want to show you guys what the different options are. And none of them are great. Really, shockingly, building a team is hard in the NBA, and it's very difficult to convince these guys. Like,
it was so hard, man.
This was very difficult.
I was sitting there like, what the hell? My options are so bad right now. Like, who the hell am I going to give this mid-level to? I forget who I had it, but I called one of my buddies who works for a team, and he's like, this is just a dumbass signing. Like, this would just be a disaster. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? You're probably right. I might want to reallocate those funds.
It's fine. It's funny. And you think about it, this is just like the theoretical stuff. Like, we're just kind of like, maybe we'll get this guy in. Like, you don't take into account, you haven't really taken into account like some personality issues and whatever. And the other thing that you learn is some of the mechanisms here in the collective bargaining agreement. And things like, I think I know, and like, oh shit, I didn't realize that. So I should say, somebody brought this up to me on Twitter. I forgot who it was. But like, I screwed up the what Kyrie could get going elsewhere, because they have this tier of like, I think eight years of service or 7 years. I forget what the number is, but like you can still get 30% of the cap. So Kyrie can actually, if he leaves, get 30% of the cap from somewhere else, but he only gets 5% raises versus 8% raises. So that changes the dynamic of whether he would actually go in these scenarios and what would his motivation be. And you start learning more about like base year compensation. Like, does anybody know about base year compensation? Well, do now when you start figuring out, hey, can I sign and trade Kyrie or sign and trade Terry Rozier? Like, that's, there are complicated mechanisms and, you know, full mid-level versus taxpayer mid-level and being hard capped because you used one versus the other. It's very difficult. And that's why you need somebody who's like a genius at this stuff, like Mike Zarin, to pull the strings and figure these things out. Cause it's very, very difficult stuff.
At one point you even forgot whether or not Robert Williams was on the team.
I really did. I didn't even include him on my roster because I didn't include, it was like the second day and I'd already traded him in the first scenario. So I just kind of, he was out of my head. And so it's, it's very important to have, like, I remember who's on the team. I think really the lesson that I learned is I'd be a terrible, terrible general manager. Like, I would just be horrible at this. And I think that most people...
And we were doing it with, like, basically every avenue we wanted open to us.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, we weren't even negotiating against people.
Right. I just foisted upon Marcus Morris a 3-year $35 million as if that's what he would take. And you're going to be happy with this. Like, he might be like, nah, screw you. I'm going to take 14 somewhere else. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a very difficult thing. And I think, I hope the one thing that you listening and reading have learned is
that we are dumbasses.
Well, that I think after all this time, they've probably already known that.
That's fair.
But a lot of times, if you're listening to the hot takers on sports talk radios, just go get this guy. It's not always that easy. It's not always that as easy as going to get a guy. It's complicated. And part of why we did this is to show you the complicated decisions. Like, how many times, Tom, have we gone back and forth and be like, what do you think Reggie Bullock is worth? And what do you think Corey Joseph is worth? And trying to, like, just at least figure out the value of a guy and how much you want to give a guy and what the implications might be. I mean, this is all complicated stuff. And some of the reductive, just go get a star, just go get this type of player. It's extraordinarily difficult to do when you're building a team in the NBA.
I do think one thing that I miscalculated, and I'm going back now a year, and this is why, to me, trading for Anthony Davis is still, like, I still think the Celtics should do it, even if Kyrie walks. Although I'm not 100% sure on that at all. Like, I could waffle back and forth. Don't hold me to that. But one thing I think everyone miscalculated a year ago was the risk of not going out and doing a lot to get someone like Kawhi. And the risk ended up being that, you know, the Celtics weren't as good as people thought they were. And Kyrie had a frustrating season. A lot of players had frustrating seasons. And if they had traded for Kawhi, you know, maybe everything unfolds differently. So I think the risk we talked about last year was always like, oh, you're getting rid of this. You'd be getting rid of young talent and you'd be breaking up a team that looks like it has so much promise. But it's like there's risk to not going and getting the superstar too. And so that's one thing that's kind of struck me about the fallout of the Kawhi stuff. And obviously, everything looks different in hindsight, but but the real risk of not going out and getting that guy when you have a chance to do it, like, there's a real risk there. And the upside of it, like Toronto has seen, it can be enormous.
It'll be fascinating to me to see if that overcorrects. Like, if teams, like, start, oh, well, you know, Paul George stuck around and Kawhi won a title or came close to winning a title in Toronto. I think it'll be really interesting to see if, I mean, like, we're all extremely high on Anthony Davis. We all think that he's, like, just an unbelievable basketball player. But, I mean, I think it'll be really interesting to see if, I mean, like, if the Celtics trade for him. And, you know, in just taking my scenario, for example, I mean, is Mike Conley, like, a huge upgrade over Drew Holiday? Like, I don't know for sure. And, you know, do the Celtics overcorrect, trade for Davis anyway, give up their young pieces, and then because they saw what happened with Kawhi, and then they're still kind of like, you know, a good team, but not like an amazing one. And then Anthony Davis leaves, and, you know, they're left holding nothing because they looked at Kawhi and Paul George and said, oh, we think we can get him to stay anyway. I don't know. I think it's complicated. And I think there's a balance that's going to be really difficult for teams to find there, where they do make the right decision in the moment, or what looks like a right decision in the moment, and it can still come back to bite them.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think
I feel like I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
like 50 times on this podcast.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah. It's me saying, I don't know. You both make good points. And there's another point to be made that you, like you said, in the moment coming off of last year where Brown was like looking great, and you think, and it's not just the talent, you think, okay, this guy's developing, he's on his rookie deal, like financially you're leaving yourself these options. And I think for Ainge, he was always looking for Anthony Davis. Like, Davis was the guy, and Kawhi presented himself. And I think I'm just guessing, that Ainge saw Anthony Davis with no question marks about his health, with no question marks about what his motivation would be, at least at the time, and said, yeah, we can get Kawhi. We're not sure about his quad. We're not sure if he's just going to bolt. We're going to hold tight. We're going to let Jaylen Brown develop. We're going to let him increase his value theoretically. And we're going to make the pitch for Anthony Davis because we love Anthony Davis more than we like Kawhi Leonard. And I think that was a reasonable position to take. I don't think that anybody was really, it's not that, it's being spun as, well, they wouldn't give up. Can you believe they wouldn't give up Jaylen Brown for Kawhi Leonard? Well, it's not that it was just that. They had other things in mind. Like, the Anthony Davis trade was always the trade. That's where it was. If there's a criticism of Danny Ainge, maybe he shouldn't have been as hyper-focused on that. But things have changed since then. Like, Clutch Sports got involved. Like, we didn't know that. And we didn't know that he was going to blow up this whole thing and force his way to L.A. or try to force his way to L.A. Like, shit changed real fast. But I can see in that moment why that decision wasn't made. But I can also see the point of, well, even though, you know, if you feel like you can get Kawhi and pair those two, you just do it and forget about waiting a year because you don't know what's going to change. You have your star player now. Like, I could see both sides of this issue. So, yeah, it's difficult. All right, well, we hope you've enjoyed this. It's kind of a wonky podcast and practice and all of this stuff from a team building perspective, but it just, again, goes to show there are a lot of options. None of them are perfect, and there are ways to justify a lot of things in team building in the NBA. So I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank all of our sponsors again, hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. Untuckit, they have a great untucked look that makes you feel comfortable at work or on the weekend. No tucking or tailoring required. Untuckit.com, use the promo code NBA for 20% off. Or Grip 6 belts, or I should say, and also thank you to Grip 6 belts. Ultralight, no holes, no flap, Great Father's Day gift if you go to grip6.com/lock. You can subscribe to the Lockdown Celtics podcast on the Himalaya podcast app, which is free, very, very easy to use. Every podcast, every Lockdown podcast is there. You can follow, like, comment there. So please do that. Give us a thumbs up and comment on individual episodes on the Himalaya podcast app. You can also follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or tell your smart device to play podcast Lockdown Celtics. That's it. Thanks for listening. This has been the Lockdown Celtics podcast here on the Lockdown Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales packing.